Hello and welcome to another episode of the Successful Home Ownership Show with your host, Richard McKenzie, out of the greater Cincinnati area, and as well as Northern Kentucky and Dayton areas. And just for reference purposes, our company is spelled 1ST First Inspection Services, if you want to look us up and look at some of our sample reports and so forth, or listen to previous podcasts. And this is, the Successful Home Ownership Show with your host, Richard McKenzie. Today's episode is called Tall, Thin, Skinny. And what do I mean by that? There are some neighborhoods in our greater Cincinnati area that are older neighborhoods, as with any river-based city. And a lot of times the property is hard to come by. Land is hard to come by. It is something that they're not building or creating anymore. And if you want a new house, something else has to come down, and then it's replaced with something else, a newer house. So, what do you do with a very narrow plot of land? Well, you do just like what they did years and years ago, back about 1910, 1890, 1880, etc., and you build tall and skinny. In this case, however, new. So there's a lot of developers in our area who are buying properties and tearing them down and building tall properties in their place. And they blend into the landscape, but they just look newer and more modern. And they're very functional. Some of them, in fact, have elevators. And the one I'm going to describe from yesterday's inspection, yes, it has an elevator. And we did test it out and so forth and went up and down. And we don't really inspect elevators per se. That is well beyond the scope of a normal home inspection. But we do note that it functioned at the time of the inspection, as well as if you need to reference the operator's manual and any perhaps annual inspections or be on a maintenance schedule, that's something that you can do outside the scope of the inspection. That being said, what do we look for in a new house inspection, or used house inspection for that matter, but one of these newer houses? In this case, this was a new build. It took approximately maybe 2 years to build, I guess off and on, as the appliances, the air conditioner, water heater, etc., were 2 years old. And so a lot of the same things with a normal home inspection apply in this case as well. We still consider drainage very important. In other words, when you're looking at the front of the property, you look on your left and right, you only have maybe a 4-foot clearance between that and your neighbor's property. And it's very common to put rocks and pebbles and stuff in there. And water certainly will run downhill towards the front of the house if the rear yard is higher than the front yard. And I say front yard kind of affectionately because it really isn't a front yard. It is probably a property that you could get by with without a lawnmower, with using just a weed eater. And maybe I didn't mention that yesterday, but that is certainly doable, because storing your lawnmower somewhere is going to be rather difficult. But you can store a weed eater somewhere. So, that being said, folks, and getting the lawnmower to the backyard from the front garage, if you're listening to this, is going to be a little difficult. So, I would recommend from the size of the rear yard, you could get pretty well skilled with using a weed whacker, going back and forth, and mow that with the weed eater. I don't think that would be a problem at all. That being said, on the left and right side, we do have the rocks, and water is going to get in between the rocks and still get up against the foundation. So I did put it as a finding yesterday to add topsoil after pulling the rocks back for the first 12 or 18 inches with a big tooth rake. Pack that clay topsoil in there, slope it away from the house, and then you can put your rocks back. Now that's going to help water definitely stay away from your foundation and increase the chances of having a healthy foundation for ad infinitum. All right, so working our way back to the backyard also, we have a patio, and our client yesterday asked about, can we put a And it's an elevated patio, a couple feet in the air. Can we put a hot tub on here? Well, you have above that patio, you have another couple of layers of balconies up above it, all connected, all using the same foundation. And therefore, calculations of that to put a hot tub with the amount of weight that water has on there is really best left for a licensed structural engineer to calculate those loads to say, yeah, you can put it on here, or something additional may need to be done to accommodate the weight of that hot tub. So, that being said, definite possibility. I know that doesn't give somebody exact confidence about it, but you don't want to take a chance and cause issues with what's up above it. You need to make those calculations properly and exactly, keyword being exact. All right, so we're looking at the rear of the house again, and what are some other things? Well, we do note that the yard and back is higher, so water's going to flow a little bit downhill, and you just want to give it a path of least resistance, as I said. So we've done that with affecting the grading. Now, the next thing we did is we looked at the air conditioners. And remember, I said that this house was 2 years old, even though it's brand new. Nobody's lived in it, but it is, in fact, a year and a half, maybe 2 years old, probably closer to a year and a half. And the appliances were all dated 2 years, and both air conditioners, when we tested them on the entry floor, which really is the basement, and then the first floor where the kitchen is, and then the two floors above it for the other unit, both of them outside were somewhat dirty, and both of them did not produce the expected temperature of supplied air, which I would probably suspect should be somewhere in the 40s. It was 63 degrees and about 75 degrees respectively, which on a blazing hot day was close to 100 yesterday here in Cincinnati. That felt good, but it was still a little warm, and it was a lot warmer on the third and fourth floors as well. So those do need to be cleaned and serviced. Probably, maybe not enough coolant was put in when they were installed. That is just a gut feel, because after 2 years, it'd be pretty difficult for the coolant to leak out and so forth. So I just don't think they were charged up properly when they were installed. That's definitely fixable. And everything in this new home inspection that we found was definitely fixable. Checking out the roof, it was a good installation. You had a dimensional shingle roof. And what do you have? What style of roof would you call it if your roof is not a gable tent-like roof, but rather a left-to-right slope gently downhill roof? I would call that a shed-style roof. It's not flat. There was a flat roof on here, which has a tiny, tiny pitch, and that part was towards the front of the house, the rear of the house, and that constituted some EPDM rubber membrane roof, which, by the way, does not last as long as the 25-year dimensional fiberglass shingle. Maybe 10 to 15 years for the rubber membrane roof, and maybe after 5 to 7 years, some of the seams may need to be updated as well. So when you have two different styles of roofs, you need to pay attention that one of them is going to need to be replaced before the other. So that's just something a little bit noteworthy to file away and reference later. And we also had some rock veneer for the siding. It looked like a good installation. One of the edges just did not have enough mortar on it, on the vertical seam on the corner. So I suggested that be a little updated, tuck pointed, etc. And then the other material for the house was a hardy plank-esque concrete board that, if you know anything about these materials, they soak up paint like a sponge. So it's always good to have a couple coats put on to start with, and then thereafter it's easier to paint, and you don't have to put quite as much paint on. But that first time you paint a concrete board, good gracious, it's going to soak up some paint like crazy. So that's something to think about. In the greater Cincinnati area, we have a lot of hills. You would think that with a river city, oh, it's just kind of flat. No, Cincinnati's called the city of seven hills. Don't know if there's really seven hills here or not, or seven mountains, whatever you want to call them. They're definitely not mountains, but it is hilly. And one of the things that I like to add in some inspections is a little bit extra stuff. I know a little bit about some of the plants and trees around us, and I have a little bit of experience with hills. And this house had a hill in the back going down away from it, probably a good 100 feet away from the back of the house, which is great. And the ground cover was euonymus, which is a very invasive vine, and it's actually a good vine because it holds soil in place and so forth. But growing around the trees and in between things is a plant called honeysuckle. Deer love it. It's basically like giving cotton candy to a deer. It's really a stupid plant, quite honestly, and it is an invasive species per the Ohio Department of Agriculture, and it prohibits stuff from growing under it, and it just kind of inhibits growth of everything else. So I suggested that they get a landscape person to cut some of these honeysuckles down to the base during the fall after the leaves have fallen off, because then you can deal with honeysuckle a lot better, and brush on some weed killer on the stumps of it to prevent it from growing back. What happens after that is the vines really just get more plush, everything around it gets thicker, and everything behaves and grows a lot better, and I think the hill will perform a lot better as well for the long run. So we put all that stuff in the report as well. Now, some of the balconies on these tall, thin houses, tall, skinny houses, when you get up to the top, there are some super good pictures. And I'm going to provide some super good pictures on this podcast here on the internet if you link onto it on Facebook or Google Business or LinkedIn, etc. I'm going to put some pretty good pictures. I really like getting on the roofs of these places, which can constitute a glorified balcony as well. And the pictures are just magnificent. Cincinnati has beautiful, beautiful pictures from tops of buildings and houses and so forth, especially near the downtown area. You get great river views from some of these regentrified neighborhoods from these condos that they've built, which a lot of times are warehouses and factories that have been turned into condos. And I just get a kick out of inspecting them. So on this particular balcony, you had these 4-foot by 4-foot drainage squares of rubber mat-like material. We can't really see underneath these, so if ever some metal stains and stuff come up between them, that might be time to get a roofer out there to remove some of these and see what's going on. But for a new house, obviously, we're not going to have any of that. That's one of the findings. You make sure the railings are all nice and tall enough, 42 inches and tight and strong and so forth. Making sure the patio doors are still good. On the third and fourth floor, I did make a suggestion to the buyers that they spend the good money on good blinds. What do I mean, good blinds? Well, I mean, don't mean the plastic kind that the sun permeates, the cheaper blinds, but you want the thick PVC material or metal on the third and fourth floor, because you're going to get the most sun up there, and you're also going to have the hot air rises concept, where it's going to be a little more difficult to cool those two floors. So block that sun as much as possible, and that should be a real good outcome to manage the heat on the third and fourth floors. There was one attic space in this particular property that looked like some construction was done, some dismantling was done of a sheathing board, which was OSB, oriented strand board, and the insulation was removed in this area. I'm not sure why, but that did need to be repaired prior to closing, and that went in the report as well. So it's sort of like the contractor was trying to make a decision on what to do with that area, and they hadn't quite finished making their decision. So that can be certainly repaired by the contractor. A couple of other things to note. It was a little bit strange in the kitchen where the stove did not operate, and the stove was a gas stove, so it really only requires a 15 amp breaker for the igniter to light either the oven or the burners. But in the electrical panel, it was a 40 amp breaker, and there was no power to the gas stove. I suspect what happened was a decision was made early on that they thought they were going to put an electric stove in there, and they changed their mind and put the gas stove. Maybe the gas line is installed, but the outlet is not there, and hence the breaker needs to be changed out back to a 15 amp breaker. Or maybe there's enough room in the panel to take another breaker and rerun the wire to facilitate that, and then verify the operation of the gas stove prior to closing, of course. So that was noteworthy and needed to be done. Just some other things about some of these builders of these tall, skinny houses. They tend to be very high efficiency because they're new. A lot of them qualify for the LEED certification of the high efficiency green building, et cetera, et cetera. So that was noteworthy. One of the little obscure things that I'll point out, laundry, really important how laundry is handled in these multi-level tall, thin houses. Why? Because if your laundry is like on the third floor, like it was at this particular location, your overflow pan for the washing machine becomes very important. If your washing machine ever fouls up, you don't want that water from your washing machine to go all over the place and ruin the whole building. What you want to have is an overflow pan that is properly connected to a drain that goes all the way to the first floor, to the slab foundation. So for this particular one, the overflow pan was punched out in a amateurish way. I'll just leave it at that. So the water was not all going to get in the drain, so they really need a new overflow pan, and it needs to be properly siliconed or other adhesive caulk to that drain so that if it ever does mess up, they can be assured that that water is going to go into the overflow pan and into the drain and not ruin their floors and other things. One other minor noteworthy item, the garbage disposal probably had sat for a while. It did have some noise in it, some construction material probably, and didn't drain real well, so that needs to be cleaned out and repaired. And then the two furnaces, the filters both need to be changed out. Not surprising at all, lots of white powder dust, which is all the sanding outcome from the drywall in the furnace filters and in the furnace itself, and that needs to be cleaned out and serviced, along with the two air conditioners that I mentioned were somewhat dirty also. So overall, though, super good place. What views, and very well built. Really had no complaints about the property. You know, these are not cheap properties. These are going to be, if you're tearing a house down and you're building a tall, thin property in a very popular area, it's not going to be cheap. These are properties that are probably somewhere between $700 and $1.5 million. They're not cheap properties. So these are ones that you take your time, you find it, you get a good inspection, somebody really knows what to do with properties like this, and you enjoy it thereafter after a few things have been repaired and so forth. And you certainly spend some copious amounts of time on the balcony after work, after a long day. And maybe you can see the sun go down, see a few stars in the sky, and enjoy your property because it's well earned. So hats off to you buyers who bought this place. I hope you enjoy this podcast as well and everybody else. So until the next episode, this has been the Successful Home Ownership Show with your host, Richard McKenzie, and thank you for listening.